This is HPR episode 1998 entitled, Homebrewing. It is hosted by M1RR0R5H4D35, and is about 24 minutes long. The summary is, a bit about making your own beer.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hello world, Mirror Shades here again. Before I get into the episode, I just wanted to talk a little bit about some of the feedback from my first show. So, first of all, my handle, the one that gives the speech synthesis fits, I actually got that from the title of a book. It's an old book. I think it came out in 1986. It's called Mirror Shades, a Cyberpunk Anthology, and it's edited by Bruce Sterling. I think you can still buy it on Amazon. It's, I was just feeling nostalgic. And of course, if you're going to do a cyberpunk handle, you have to do it in Leet. That's just how it is. Also, the tape recorder. The reason why I used that is I just found it. I forgot I even owned the thing. Was cleaning out a closet, had a bunch of hardware in there, and I found it, and there was a blank tape, actually a sealed, unused blank tape, and so that's why I used it to record the first episode. And funny story, after I recorded that show, the recorder quit working. It just died an unspectacular death, and doesn't work anymore. Oh well. So, let's see, the last thing is my accent. I seem to have, when I apologize for my accent, it's not because I'm ashamed of my accent or anything like that. I just never sure how much other people will be able to understand the words that I'm using. My accent's actually not terribly thick. If what I'm going to tell you is a little bit anecdotal. So in Kentucky, it seems to be, the further west you go, the milder the accent is, and I grew up in central Kentucky, but most of my family is from eastern Kentucky, and eastern Kentucky is more of the Appalachian region. It's the mountain area, so accents there are much, much thicker, and sometimes they can really be hard to understand if you're not familiar with them. So my speech is a little weird. It's a little bit of a mix, which I guess is normal if you're from central Kentucky. It's not as thick as an eastern Kentucky accent, but I usually understand what those people are saying pretty well. But I've heard accents, Kentucky accents, or I guess Appalachian accents, that are so thick that, you know, many people have trouble understanding what they're saying. And you know, that's okay. It's just, it's regional. Some people mistake my accent for a southern drawl, and it's not. A southern drawl is what you'll hear if you listen to someone who's from, like, Georgia or someplace. Most of the people who settled in the Appalachian region are of Irish, Scottish, German, and some Scandinavian descent. So the accent here is pretty much unique to Appalachia. And also, before I get into the episode, just wanted to share, I got something really cool here. My grandfather, my father's father, was born, raised, lived, and died in eastern Kentucky. I have a recording of him, and I'm going to play just a snippet of it for you, and so you can hear and a little bit more of an authentic Eastern Kentucky accent. It's kind of cool. I'll go ahead and play that now, and then it's not very long. The whole recording I have is about an hour and a half. I'm just going to play a little, just a couple of minutes. The audio quality on this is extremely rough. It was recorded in the early 90s, and he was, I think he was in his 70s. So, just going to play that just as an aside, so you can hear that, and then we'll get into the episode itself.
Sure did have a hard time in that old holler, trying to make a living. He had to raise everything he eat back then. He'd buy that out of the store. He'd get a hold of my money to buy it with. Get a hold of a nickel. Left as big as a wagon wheel. Get a hold of one of them dollar bills that looked like a bed plate. Had to raise corn and potatoes and everything. Upon them steep hillsides. That's hard to stand up on them at all. He had no hard time the first 2 or 3 years to live in that old holler. Finally, we learned a few shortcuts, kept us out of old lot. We'd get ready to plant our corn in the spring. We had no double barrel shotgun. We'd load both barrels of it. We'd fill them barrels up with corn. Pull that old gun off and give them barrels to fork around that hillside. Shoot that corn up there. That helped us out a whole lot. And we learned how to plant our taters so we wouldn't have to dig them. We laid the rows off up down the hill. That fall when you got ready to dig the taters, but it still opened up the lower side of the row. Both just echoed. Them taters pour out in the sack. They ain't all that tater dig. It was a great big job. It would, instead of a whole far place to go in the wintertime. It's about like Florida's only water. One thing about it, though, you didn't have to worry about getting your wood to the hat. It's up far on the hillside, and you had it roll right down to the hat. Worked out pretty good that way. They went for two families lived in that old holler. That's an old man and his wife lived in that boat. That ice pile. I started down the holler one day. That old man is standing down on the road. He used to take coal in his hand. He just open and the casting and raising all kinds of sand. I said, what in the world's the matter with you? He said, this makes the third time I fell out of that confounded cornmeal today. I said, well, that's too bad. He said, it ain't half as bad falling out as it is climbing that steep hillside, trying to get back up in that cornmeal. Well, you need to do something about that. Well, what in the world am I going to do? Well, you could get your big long rope and tie around your waist. Tie the other end to a tree up or something. He says, I hadn't thought about that. I think I'll try that. We must have tried it. Never did hear no more out there. I'd glad to help old feller out. He's getting old. I guess he was having a hard time. Get that corn tin is falling out of that field. I have to climb back up above them on the top of the day.
Okay. So, that was my grandfather. The sound quality on that's pretty rough. I'm sorry. He recorded that on an old tape recorder with no mic, on a very cheap cassette outside. So, it is what it is. It's pretty cool. So what I'm going to do this episode, I'm going to talk about homebrew, but I'm not talking about applications. I'm talking about beer. And I know a lot of people think about doing homebrew from time to time, especially if you're, you know, a beer lover. It's going to cross your mind at some point. And there's a lot of information out there on homebrewing, and there's a lot of equipment out there for it. And I think the biggest hurdle most people have when they think about homebrewing their own beer is you see all this equipment, it's very expensive, and a lot of people, if they decide to test the waters, they wind up buying one of these inexpensive little, like, Mr. Beer type kits, or they get one for Christmas. And so if you look online, some of the opinions of the Mr. Beer kits aren't, you know, they're all over the place. Some people say they're fine, some people say they're horrible. What I wanted to do is just to share some tips to get the most out of one of these inexpensive entry-level kits. Because it is a good way to find out if it's something you want to do or not, if it's something you want to invest in, you know, better equipment or, you know, better ingredients and stuff and actually get into, or, you know, if you just want to continue using the Mr. Beer kits, extremely easy to use. But, you know, you're not going to get the full homebrew experience with it, but it will, it's good for a beginner. It's a good way to kind of learn how to go through the motions. But there's a few things that I've noticed that when people get bad results out of it, it's usually it's one of three things that four things that they've overlooked. And so I want to go over those real quick. So if you're in that boat and you've decided to try it out, maybe you'll get a little bit better results. Save you the trouble and frustration of having to do all this research on your own like I did. So the first thing is, with the kit or even the refills, they will come with a little pack of, I think it's called No Rinse Sanitizer, and you will want to use that. You will want to use that on anything that's going to touch your beer. The pot that you're going to cook the wort in, any spoons, spatulas, inside the fermenter, the bottles, anything that's going to come in contact with your beer, you're going to want to make sure you use that No Rinse Sanitizer on. That's very important because if foreign particles get in there, it's not going to poison your beer, but it's going to most likely make it skunky. If you've never had skunky beer, count your blessings. There's a reason why they say it's skunky beer. It's not a pleasant aroma. So use the sanitizer. You know, be meticulous. Sanitize everything. The second thing is water. I forget what it is, something like 85% of beer is water. The better water, the better quality water that you use is going to render a higher quality product in the end. So don't just fill it up with that nasty stuff that comes out of your tap. If you guys overseas, probably you may not have this problem. Here in the U.S., our tap water is nasty, and just don't use tap water. If you have access to a natural spring that has, you know, good water or a natural source of good fresh water, that works really well. If not, and you have to go out and buy water, buy spring water. Don't buy distilled water. Spring water is probably your best bet if you have a favorite brand of spring water or something. Or if you have one of those pitchers with the filter in it, you know, you can filter your tap water and it'll work okay. I've seen some people do that. Just make sure you use, you know, good quality water. I think a lot of people who wind up with really nasty beer wind up using just water out of the tap. They think that's good enough, it'll be fine, and it's not. The third thing is temperature. So the beer will ferment at, and you know, ice is bad. I don't remember what the optimal temperature is. There's a range. It's fine. Whatever they say in the instructions is fine. But just you want to make sure that, you know, you don't store the fermenter when you're letting the wort ferment in some place that's really hot or really cold, or the temperature goes up and down on a lot. excuse me. It needs to be a fairly stable temperature, and you should be fine. And the last thing is patience. One of the things that the instructions in these cheap kits, particularly the Mr. Beer kit, I know says this. They say you can ferment in the fermenter for a week, and then condition in the bottle for a week, and then you can drink your beer. And I'm here to tell you that is complete fiction. Don't do it. You're not going to be pleased with what you wind up with. Let it sit in the fermenter for 2 weeks. If it sits in there for three, it's not going to hurt it. I've let some go over. I've let a couple batches go over to 3 weeks. And then when you bottle it, you're going to want to let it sit in the bottles. This process is called conditioning. You let it sit in the bottles for, I would let it sit for a couple of weeks. And then you can stick them in the fridge and get them cold and drink them. Because that extra time is, just trust me, just do it. Don't do the 2 week thing. You're going to wind up with something nasty, some swill that you don't want. That's another place where that's very common for people to go wrong their first time trying to homebrew. I don't even know why they put that in the instructions. That's just crazy. Those are really the four big ones. Sanitize, good water, stable temperature, and give it enough time to work its magic. There's a few other little tips. Just on the tail end of this, I want to talk about one is yeast. So if you buy one of these inexpensive kits or you buy a refill for it, it's going to come with a little pack of yeast. And that yeast, I've seen homebrewers on forums and stuff talk about how horrible it is and that you're better off investing a couple extra dollars in getting some premium yeast, that it enhances the flavor profile and all this stuff. I've never had bad luck with the yeast that comes with the kits, so I don't know. If you want to experiment with that, by all means, go ahead. I've never really had an issue with the yeast it comes with. I think the big thing is, like I said, giving it enough time to work its magic and making sure the temperature is stable. They also sell a little thing. It's called Yeast Nutrient, and you can buy like a pound bag of it. It's pretty cheap. I forget how much it is. You can get it either from Homebrew Supply or they sell it on Amazon. And you can add some of that at the beginning of the fermentation process, and it helps to keep the yeast healthy and doing its thing. I did try some of it. It seemed to, it worked okay. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you if it actually did anything amazing or not. But you can do that too if you want. I also want to talk about a few differences in beer that you buy in the store versus beer that you brew yourself at home. So there's a few processes that beer undergoes when you buy it in the store that you actually will not be doing, or you will be doing differently in a homebrew situation. So when you buy beer in the store, it has been filtered and it has been pasteurized. And you're probably not going to do that in a homebrew situation. It's okay. It's not going to hurt you. We've been making beer without filtering or pasteurizing it for several thousand years now. I actually, to be honest, like it better when it's not filtered or pasteurized. It's definitely different. You'll be able to taste the difference when you drink your own beer that you've made the first time. I don't know. It is better than the stuff in the store, I think. That's an opinion of mine. You know, your mileage may vary. The other thing is carbonation. So when you buy beer in the store, it's force carbonated by injecting CO2 in it. The same way they do soda or any other carbonated beverage. And then it's kept in pressurized containers until it's consumed. With homebrew, you can actually buy the equipment to do that. There's really not much of a reason to. Most homebrewers, what they do and what you'll be doing if you're just, you know, getting started and just trying this out, is when you go to bottle it, you're going to put some sugar in each of the bottles before you drain the fermenter into the bottles. And that sugar is called priming sugar, and what it does is it reactivates the yeast inside the beer, and not a lot, just a little, and it will create a little more alcohol, not a significant amount, but what it also does is releases CO2, and it does this naturally. So this is called natural carbonation, and it's a different, I guess, body is the word I'm looking for. It's going to be differently bodied than beer you buy in the store, and the carbonation, natural carbonation, is a little bit different. I've noticed when you pour it, if you pour it into a mug or something, it's going to get a really big foam head on it, but it'll dissipate quicker than what you get in the, you know, in store-bought beer. And I think that's about it. If you're on the fence, it's, you know, homebrew is pretty fun. It's legal to do in the States. That's another thing. I don't know why, but people seem to think this is illegal. You can legally brew, I think it's 200 gallons per calendar year for personal use. Now, you can't sell it. You have to have a liquor license to sell. You can give it to your family and friends. I usually just drink mine. But there you go. If you've ever thought about it, if you've ever wondered, it's not terribly hard. And I think the kits are pretty inexpensive now. If you want to give it a shot, I would recommend going ahead doing it. And if you have any questions about it, you know, you can leave a comment or shoot me an email or something. I will do my best to answer questions on that front. And that's about it for me today. Thanks for listening. And enjoy your beer.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.